Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's edition of Scouting the League live from Mobile, Alabama. We are under the bleachers at practice this afternoon. Gorgeous sunny day, lots of fans out here, all 32 teams, multiple reps. It's been a really good couple days. We will get into all things Senior Bowl here in a bit. As always, make sure you like, subscribe, share this podcast wherever you listen. You can find myself, Roderick David, former NFL scout at RightStepADV. Website's also rsafootball.com. As always, we have Neil Stratton at Inside the League on X. Neil, good to have you down here. And today's guest, James Kirkland. James and I go way back. James has probably done just about everything in a football building from the college side, pro side. Harken back to the 2014 Senior Bowl as members of the Tennessee Titans. James and I got a ride down together to the Senior Bowl that year. Things have changed a little bit now at Hancock Whitney as opposed to good old Ladd Peebles, but the Senior Bowl's still the game that continues to grow. James, good to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we'll do an intro with you here in a minute. First, some big news breaking across the league with a couple of these positions. Neil, I know you mentioned both Rex Hogan as well as a change in Pittsburgh. Let's hit those to begin with. You know, changes across front offices. Again, Joe Horitz going out to Los Angeles, going from one Harbaugh to another. Changes continue in the front office as well as coaching hires. Coach McDonald headed out to Seattle. Moving and shaking, seems like it's still maybe a later process this year. Washington still making a decision. Kind of what's your feel on all these changes as they continue to happen?
Well, the changes I think in the NFL front office are what surprises everyone. I think it's kind of become conditioned that January is the time when we find out when new head coaches are going to be hired. But to have a scout with 20 years in with a team and a team that really hasn't made a lot of changes in its front office, a guy who's been involved in Super Bowls, who's been on the pro and college side, like Dave Pettit, really comes as a surprise. And I spoke to Dave last night. He was as surprised as anybody else was. I've spoken to a number of other people who didn't expect this. And so that's a disappointment. He's a guy who's been a good soldier for a long time, a high character person. And again, there was no one that I talked to who said, oh, yeah, that's been coming for a long time. He was a key part of their scouting department, and now he's not. As for Rex Hogan, again, just really, I'm shocked. I think that Rex is a guy that a lot of people have thought could be a GM someday, not a guy maybe that has gotten a lot of interviews necessarily, maybe a guy that's not on the tip of everyone's tongue, but widely respected across the league. The Jets have not had maybe the success that they were expecting to have, certainly this year and maybe recently. And I know that to some degree, maybe it's a situation where he's getting off the ship before it sinks. But for Rex to be the guy that would be let go is a real surprise to me. I know there's been some speculation. There was obviously a story that came out, I believe, yesterday or maybe today, that didn't look very favorably on the coaches and scouts and front office in New York. And I was told by a very good source that that's not why this happened. It wasn't Rex. This is apparently something that's been in the works for a while, but been kept under wraps. So here we are. And so two guys that are very capable, who've been doing this for a long time, are on the street. And I guess time will tell if they resurface. Rooting for both of them. It's just funny because in the NFL, the more experience you have, I think sometimes the more you have a target on your back. And we're here with two guys that perform very capably in NFL front offices. They're no longer there either. So I guess the proof's in the pudding. It's just really surprising.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a Pittsburgh Steelers organization that was with Kevin Colbert for a long time, and now you've got, fairly major changes over the last couple of years. Again, we're talking another organization in the Jets who doesn't have the stability, but again, you've got changes there. Again, for front office, again, Pittsburgh operates the way Pittsburgh does, has been successful a long time. Baltimore, again, maybe the most talented roster in the NFL this year, come up just short. Joe Horitz getting the opportunity to go be a GM, one Harbaugh to another. Again, that's a front office that every year they probably have two to three candidates for GM jobs. A lot of them have chosen to stay because of the stability with everything, ownership, front office, head coach, GM. Again, an organization that, right or wrong, the Baltimore way is the Baltimore way. Again, there's a lot of really good reasons to stay in Baltimore. But again, Joe getting his chance to go out, you know, opposite side of the country, you know, good for him. Again, we won't get real deep into the coaching as Coach McDonald is headed to Seattle. Again, a hot name, you know, helped bring Michigan out of the dumps, you know, comes back and conducts a really good defense there in Baltimore. Now going to have his chance to take over a team where defense has been the standard. So we'll have big shoes to fill there. So changes will continue to happen. Again, not everything settled. Again, as everybody knows, this is the time for all the top end changes. This is the time for directors, GM changes, for all the scouting moves down the road area, pro scouts, college scouts, national scouts. Really expect to see more of those come post-draft as teams get through the process here. New GMs are going to evaluate their staffs and we'll see where they go from there. But again, lots of moving and shaking. Again, it's not always just about the football on the field here. There are lots of meetings, lots of shaking of hands, rubbing of elbows down here in Mobile. So it's always a good time for that. So with that, let's jump over. James, let's get you in here. James,
what's up, man?
Welcome. Welcome. Again, this is my lesson as a young scout. 2013, I spent the fall with the Tennessee Titans. James Kirkland, one of our pro scouts, again, him, Dennis Polian, took me under their wings, treated me right. Again, the value of relationships and networking, something I dropped the ball on. Got to see James over the years as he went to Illinois, and I was in the Midwest. But James now with the NCAA. James, welcome. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you've been, where you've come from, all the many things you've had success doing.
Thanks, man. I appreciate all those fine things you said about your boy. But I have been around for a little while. Started with the Atlanta Falcons, with Les Snead, Ron Hill, back in 03. Went from there to Cleveland. Spent 6 years there, worked college and pro scouting. Met and worked with a bunch of great scouts and, you know, great football names. Went from there to Chicago, where I met Lovie Smith and worked for him there and worked for the great Jerry Angelo, which everybody has a great impression of if you talk to anybody about Jerry. And also worked with Kevin Turks, guys like that. Left Chicago, went to Tennessee for a year, and then I went back to Cleveland for 2 years. But I failed to mention, obviously, at Tennessee, we worked with young Lake Dawson and Rustin Webster.
Yep.
Two great ones.
As good as they come there.
And the other thing I want to say is, you know, Dave Pettit, it's a guy I started with. He started in Pittsburgh when I started in Cleveland. Great dude. Dyed in the wool, professional scout. Knows what he's looking at, knows what he's doing. He's won championships, so hated to see that happen with him. And obviously the same with Rex Hogan. Got a chance to work with him in Chicago. Really good dude. Always brings some levity to the room.
Talking about Jerry Angelo, I put my money on Rex for best Jerry Angelo impression.
Rex may have the best impression of Jerry Angelo. The legend, Jerry Angelo. So, yeah, thanks for having me, guys. You know, I appreciate you having me here. You know.
Yeah, so it's obviously a journey. Again, college, pro. Again, you've done a little bit of everything.
That's right, yeah.
I think you mentioned just about everybody in the NFL that you've worked with at some point, which is, you know, great perspective. Now with the NCAA, what is your role with the NCAA now?
Okay, well, I mean, the NCAA, you know, obviously, I didn't mention I worked at Illinois with Lovie Smith for 5 years, ran the recruiting department there. Worked 2 years at Michigan State under Mel Tucker. And once I left there, went to the NCAA. So the NCAA gig is a really interesting deal because ultimately when you're in a building, you kind of see everything through a straw, you know? So you kind of see what's happening in your area. You don't see everything else. Working with the NCAA has enabled me to have more of a 30,000-foot view and see more of the landscape and have a broader understanding of what is actually going on in college athletics. It's different for me because it's more administration, so I've had to read more books. and learn the history and how did we get here and who are the players and why is this here and all of that sort of stuff. So it's been a journey within itself. But I would say what I'm doing now is more of a liaison type of position. You know, everybody kind of thinks of the NCAA as this faraway place. But really and truly, we the NCAA is very diligent about having its finger on the pulse of what's happening in the membership. And it's very, very active. And I think one thing that people forget is that all of these schools that, you know, all of these schools, they are the NCAA.
Yes.
You know, the NCAA is the makeup of the membership. So we work really hard to try to make sure that we service the membership and know what's going on with them.
Yeah, knowing what's going on, that could be a challenge in and of itself right there. Again, we've obviously seen a change in landscape. You referenced the history. Again, history goes back a long time. Obviously, the NCAA in a lot of ways has kept up, maybe been a step behind, but again, they find a way. You go back to really the COVID years, again, and how it seems like time sped up for the NCAA, and then you had the NIL, yes. And again, good luck keeping up with that. So now, again, like you said, the NCAA is the big bad beast in the, you know, closet that, again, you open the door and you can't find it, but you know it's there, it's under the bed, everybody wants to beat up on it, but again, like you said, it comes back, it's a membership institution, so everybody that wants to beat up on the NCAA, and our school is innocent, Tennessee, Virginia, again.
No comment from me on that. I don't know what's
so again. Let's go with the 30,000 foot. Obviously, anybody that's looking at it, there are questions the NCAA and their member institutions have to figure out. Again, what is the biggest issue facing? And again, keep it on the football because this is a football podcast.
Sure.
Football makes money. Football supports a lot of other sports. Football is a TV-driven, make a lot of money. What is it about the NCAA and member institutions that is going to allow them to have a solution on the other side of all that is going on right now?
Okay. So what I would say, I would draw on kind of a little bit of my experience. So in 2016, when I went to Illinois, recruiting was done a certain way. Recruiting, tackle football, it happened in a certain type of way. The calendar was one way, and transfers happened this way and all that, right? So, and I'm not going to get into the particulars of it, but I will tell you, by the time I was at Michigan State in 2022, it was almost unrecognizable.
100%.
Okay? Yeah. So the landscape changed. Not only did it change quickly, it changed drastically.
Yep.
Okay. So with that in mind, I don't think anybody was prepared for how things changed and how quickly they changed. Now you add in COVID and the fact that you want to try to help the student athlete there that, hey, is working in kind of the circumstances that they were working within weren't ideal.
Yep.
Hey, everybody, hey, we're basically going to reset and do things differently. Well, that had its consequences as well. So you add all of those things together and, we've got some work to do to figure the way forward in college athletics overall and football in particular. So, I think the best thing that's going on is that we have a new president, Charlie Wright Baker, who recently just put out the Project D1 proposal. That's generated a ton of conversation. And I think right now, because, football hasn't been like this before. College tackle football hasn't been like this before. So I think to be able to get a lot of people's opinions and thoughts and expertise on what the way forward should be, I think is a great start. So, unfortunately, I don't have answers.
That's the thing. If you had all the answers, you'd be getting paid a lot more money and you wouldn't be sitting with, slappies like me and Neil today.
That's not true.
You're part of the process. I mean, you're the fact that you've been on all sides of it. Again, you've seen NCAA football from an NFL perspective. You've seen it from being in the department at a really good football school in Illinois that's part of a major conference and, is, a historic program. They've, won and they've been good. And now, again, now you're flipping it around, changing their perspective. You bring unique perspective, which I think is needed. You don't want a bunch of administrators that have never had feet on the ground. You don't want a bunch of people that don't understand what it's like in an athletic building. But again, you need those people, but you got to have a balanced conversation with all of it. And again, you laid it out there, just like any new GM or head coach is going to come in and they're going to have their program. Again, mm-hmm. Michigan's going to figure it out with Sherrone Moore. No Coach Herbert there anymore. Sure. Again, Michigan State, as you mentioned, somewhere you were. Again, you've got to have a new program and you've got to have a new blueprint for how you're going to do it. It sounds like Charlie Baker has that and has now laid it out. That's the first step. Now yes. You've got to get everybody on the same page. Again, follow the blueprint and now it's time to go. It's just going to take a minute. And that is the mm-hmm. hardest part. Imagine, you know, trying to tell every fan base to be patient. Good luck with that, right?
Well, the beautiful thing is there are a lot of people that have, you know, specific expertise that you want to try to take advantage of. And that's the best thing. That's what I really like about the Project D1 proposal is that it's like, hey, look, here's a model. Now let's talk about it. Let's get the right people in the room and let's talk about it. If you have something that you think would make it a little bit better, hey, let's bring it to the table. Let's talk about it. So I think the fact that President Baker is open about it. He realizes that, hey, there's got to be, you know, maybe a different way forward. I think that's a step in the right direction. And to be honest with you, I would tell you myself at the NCAA, it energizes me that's been his approach.
If somebody listening is curious about that plan, is that something that's out there public that the NCAA has put out, or is that an internal document?
No, it's out.
Where would people be able to find that if they just, hey, wanted to hit the bullet points, kind of see what James is talking about? Where would they be able to find that?
I would Google Project D1.
Project D1, just Google it. You'll be able to find it. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably competent enough to type something into Google or a search engine. So hopefully I'm not giving you too much credit. But again, having a vision, having a plan, that's mm-hmm. really good. Talking specifically about football. Again, football is it's a moneymaker. Again, money drives decisions, money drives conversations, money drives everything. There's a lot of money in football. Obviously, you see it now, the athletes starting to get paid the right way or the wrong way, on the books, off the books. Again, it's maybe gotten a little bit cleaner since, you know, McDonald's bags being handed over, a shoebox showing up on doorsteps. But again, the money is going to drive the conversation. We're down near the Senior Bowl. I think it's only a matter of time before Senior Bowl and East West starts paying these guys to come in and play for a full week. The money matters. How is it that the NCAA is going to continue to, you know, not tell you how to spend your money, not tell you how you can get paid, but make sure it's equitable. Again, I've made the salary cap comparison. Mm-hmm. It's baseball. You know, again, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, they can pay whatever they want. There's no salary cap. That's college football right now with NIL. If you got mm-hmm. the money, go pay him. You want to pay your backup quarterback $1 million, go pay him. Mm-hmm. Until there's a salary cap like the NFL, like something, again, there's going to be maybe less, you know, disparity in the top-end teams. You're going to have your, you know, 8 to 12 top-end teams that can pay everybody. Again, is that somewhere part of the D1 football plan that, hey, we've got to – we want to keep a even landscape, or how do the dollar figures play into everything?
I appreciate how you just got right into the thick of it right there, which is, you know, really kind of the hardest part.
It is.
You know, but like I said, that is actually addressed within the proposal. So it's, again, like it's never been like this before.
It's never been like
changing the model. Or possibly changing the model. And I think that's part of why you have to be open to, you know, real suggestions about which way is the way to go forward. Because there is no easy, clean answer. You know, you can, like, okay. All right, they need a salary cap. Well, are they employees?
There you go, right there. Are they employees? So, that's a like, great question. Like,
you know, There's a lot that has to be kind of managed within, you know, setting a model for.
Well, like you said, again, it is addressed in the model, which, again, for the first time, the NCAA is really putting it out there that the financial part out in the open has to be a part of the conversation. Again, one of those things that a lot of people have to wrap their mind around. And again, for the old school football people, now you go play for Pride in your school, and yeah, that's, yeah, I'm not going to say it's gone. Plenty of guys going and doing it, playing for Pride. And again, you put on the jersey, it means something. But again, if you can take care of your family after a couple of year college career, that means something too. So, definitely a part of it. I'm definitely going to encourage everybody to go look at that plan. What you got?
I think, taking care of your family, I mean, there's still an academic and education component there, right? And, you know, which is part of the mission, right? So that has to be somewhat in consideration as well. You know what I mean? So otherwise, is it pro sports?
Yeah.
Right? So, obviously being around, you hear a lot of things. Hey, we need to do this. I hear what you're saying, but your suggestion takes away this part of it. You sure we want to do that?
Right.
Oh, I didn't think about it that way. I think more than anything, really, we're looking for solutions. Absolutely. Like, everybody can kind of point it out and say, hey, this isn't right, that ain't right, that ain't right. But like, what are solutions? What's a cogent, clear solution and a path forward? I think that's where we're working to get to.
James, we're getting ready to go to 12 teams in the CFP.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that having an impact kind of on what we have right now, where I don't want to call it chaos necessarily, but maybe it is chaos that we're seeing on the portal, NIL, all those kind of things. Will it move the needle? Will it change anything? Or is it pretty much just more of the same?
What I would say is since the portal came into play, it's only gotten more and more and more. Because at the end of the day, if you're in a building and you're trying to win, you know, especially if you got a new coach in, that sort of thing, you want to try to win as quickly as possible. How do you do that? You can add a guy that's got some experience, he's played a little bit, and you can get him on your roster, and he can come in and help right now, as opposed to developing a kid. You know, that decision's being made a lot of schools are moving much more over to the portal rather than developing high school kids. So my thought is that I don't know that going to 12 teams in the CFP is going to really affect the portal. To be honest with you, I mean, what slows the portal down? You know what I mean? Because I've only seen it pick up.
Yeah.
And I mean, what was it this year? I mean, even the junior declares for the NFL, that number is starting to taper down. Right?
We're talking about that.
So those guys are staying in college. Mm-hmm. Now they've got a little bit more flexibility. They got more options for them and their families.
Yep.
They're taking advantage of it. So I'm not sure how 12 teams will change it. But I expect the portal to be a prominent way that teams manage their roster going forward. That's what I would say.
Sure.
Okay, do you think about, so again, an NFL hires, let's say, a new GM, a new head coach. Again, it's out front. You got to rebuild the roster. You got to redo your coaching staff. Again, guys sign 5-year contracts, 6-year contracts, but you got 3 years to prove it. You see that over and over. Yeah. It's going to be the same thing with this plan set out by President Baker. It's going to take time. It's going to be we're going to build a good foundation this year, and then we're going to build on top of it the next year. Again, how, knowing the patience of the average fan out there, again, fan is short for fanatic for a reason. For the average fan out there that wants to see progress and see, again, hey, it is getting better. It's calming down. It's getting, if you put a timeline on it, are we going to see incremental steps in everything under control? And again, how patient does everybody need to be, realistically, to see this all shake out?
Yeah, that's a really good question. what I would say is some in some ways it's almost a recruiting question, right? You know, is it better to go fast and sign a guy or take your time, make sure it's the right guy and go forward with that? So that's all, you know, you can do something fast, but, you know, there's always unforeseen consequences yeah. where you make the decisions really quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would hope, you know, you move a little bit slower and be a little bit more deliberate. People won't necessarily like that, but, you know, doing things the right way isn't necessary. Like, the right way and the fast way aren't always congruent.
Quick cure concrete does not have the same lifespan that slow set and concrete does.
No.
I'm pretty sure. No. I think I had a contractor tell me that one time. So I'm gonna rely on him. But again, it's the NCAA has been around for over 120 years at this point. It's been around for a while. So again, change is gonna happen. It's not going away. There is a plan. Again, I encourage you, if you are interested, if you're curious about the subject, go out, type it into Google, you know, Chrome, whatever search engine you use. NCAA, what was it again?
D1? Project D1.
Project D1.
Project yep. D1. There we go. Short memory. Must be a corner or something. Project D1. There we go. You know, it's going to be out there. And again, we can only hope we see, you know, some kind of signs of things, again, calming down. We've talked about it with NFL scouts, how it has affected scouts' lives. Again, as guys jump around, again, a guy 1 year, again, 1 year at Illinois, 1 year at Ohio State. I've heard people say, no, it gives you two different staffs. Yeah, two different staffs that don't know the kid, two different scouts that all they're worried about is getting him on the field for one game. It creates problems, again, in the NFL, makes scouts work harder, makes coaches, you know, their job is different, not developing them. Again, it becomes a short-term transactional thing. So as it all evens out, it will be better for the game of football. That's, again, at the end of the day, we want a good product on the field, and that means that there should be a good product in the building year-round. You're talking 17 to 20-year-olds that need some stability in a lot of situations. This is going to be the most stable environment they're in with their football program. Again, coming from a lot of different backgrounds, and you want it for them. You don't want guys jumping from year to year, different programs, trying to find the perfect fit and, you know, the glass slipper to fit. And, you know, so I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. I think the main thing, like, look, we want the student athlete to have a great experience. And we want them to be able to be set up for their future down the line. Look, everybody doesn't go to the league.
Everybody, I mean, it's a small percentage.
I mean, look, when I played D1 ball, I thought I was going to the league. And then the draft came and went, and I didn't hear my name. It's like, Lord have mercy, I got to find a job. But luckily, I had a degree.
Yep.
To that really kind of gave me something to stand on that, hey, look, I can see something through to completion. Okay, so I think if we keep the student athlete first, make sure they have a good experience, and set them up for a situation where they can go out into life if they don't make it to the league, but still be able to pursue their passions and their dreams, maybe from a little bit of an advantaged situation. And I think that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
That's a good thing. Yeah, so, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a road. It's going to be a little bit of work to do to get to the point where we got a good way forward. But, you know, hey, I think I'm confident that we'll get the right people in the room and be able to find a way forward. I think it'll be fine. College football is too important.
It's too important. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get back to Senior Bowl, guys. I think that's why most people be listening today. All right. My first Senior Bowl, I think, was 01 or maybe 02, and I should have done my homework before I got here. But the lasting memory of that week was Chad Johnson came out here. I think he had just transferred to Oregon State maybe and played a year. Then he came out here and put on a show, ran every route, caught every pass. He was obvious winner this week. Can y'all remember players, maybe from when y'all were in the league scouting, that really made an impression on you while you're at the Senior Bowl? So not so much now. I mean, again, everyone that's on this that's listening knows you're talking about, especially for the last few years, 4 years at a school. They come here as seniors. You've already got an opinion on these guys. But are there people that came and really changed the way you thought about them? Maybe because of what they did on the field, maybe because of what how they responded in interviews. Anyone that y'all can think of that really helped themselves in the way that the media describes it now is guys really coming here to help themselves. Who are those players?
The one who stands out the most to me is Pat Willis. You know, back then I think I was doing the West Coast, so okay. I knew of him, I had heard of him, mm-hmm. I saw some tape of him. Man, this guy's a really good player. And then I just come out here, watch him work on the field. Guy's great, you know. Mm-hmm. But I got to interview him, met him, interviewing him. I mean, the guy was nice as a box of puppies, but he was smart. I mean, he was on it. He understood, like he was a person. He was a real person. You could relate to him. You could talk to him. I mean, I was like, as much as I like the guy as a player, I love him as a person. And at the end of the day, like one of the lessons I take from my first tackle football scouting experience with the Falcons, Ron Hill told me, if you're going to start a roster, you start with A-plus people. A guy like Pat Willis, who showed up as the player and person he was, there was no doubt that he was going to have success at this level as long as he was able to stay healthy. So, I think proof is in the pudding. But that's the guy that stands out.
I often wish that he would have played longer, man. I mean, I think he left us before his time. And I'm not arguing with him. He played a high-impact position.
Yeah.
But, man, what a great player while he was on the field. Roger, yes. How about you, man?
Yeah, a little more recent one for me, and it was kind of a back-end roster guy, Ben Skowronek. I liked Ben at Northwestern, but, again, I liked him. Again, he was a role player, transfers over to Notre Dame, has a good year, comes down here to the Senior Bowl, and, again, the question, he was about 215, 210. I think he weighed in at 212, and the question was, is this guy an inside wide receiver, or can he make him a tight end? And he gets hurt the interview day in practice. Well, come to find out, he had been trying to play through a Jones fracture in his foot.
Wow.
Goes out there, plays, goes up for a ball, comes down, lands on his face, and he's bloodied up. He comes to the interviews because they were trying to get him out of there. He's like, no, I'm going to the interviews. Like, you can tell by looking in the dude, he's not there. He's concussed, but he wants to interview. Mm-hmm. And again, I think he went through three or four interviews and his headache just got too bad. So he left. Thankfully, we were one of them. But as I'm cutting it up with him, I knew he was going to be a guy that I liked. Again, an A-plus dude, as you said, James. And I'm like, hey, you know, he's getting ready to leave. We're about done. I say, you know, Ben, what if we want to put on 20 pounds and make you the best, you know, Travis Kelce tight end in the league? He dropped some expletives, but his answer was yes. And he was like one of those guys you walk away like, you win football games with this guy. You put him on your roster, he is going to be a number four wide receiver, but when you need him to be a good three, he's going to make a big catch. Saw that with the Los Angeles Rams. He's going to be your best special teams player. Guys like that where you just walk away from the interviews. The on-field stuff, yeah, good, solid. Again, didn't have a full chance to show, but again, you walk away like, that is a dude. You want dudes on your team. You don't just want guys on your team. You want dudes. And he was he's going to be a guy come April meetings when we're talking about that seventh round pick. Like, yes, this guy makes our roster. He makes our roster better because he's going to make everybody in that wide receiver room better. Everybody in the special teams room better because, again, he's going to play at that standard. Again, you've kind of seen it with the Rams. Just a really fun player that, you know, he's going to make it for, you know, however long he chooses to make it just because he has that kind of attitude and mindset.
Okay, I have another question. So one of the battles that a lot of the All-Star Game directors face, and I hear it all the time from this, kids know that the scouts are here for practices and not so much here for the games. So they'll come and they'll practice and then they'll leave. If a kid came down here and he practiced and then he took off from the game, that really impacts the way you looked at him, or is it all kind of, you know, he made his own decision, whatever, whatever. I mean, everyone wants to say, well, we've got to have something that some kind of leverage to keep these players there. But ultimately, does it matter at all to y'all as scouts and how you evaluate them if they do that?
I mean, it wouldn't matter to me. I mean, look, evaluating the players, it's like putting a puzzle together. So, like, it's you just drop it in the soup. Hey, he came to practice. He ain't even playing the game. Like, what does that say? Like, you start getting into what kind of character is this guy? You know, and again, I'm looking for A-plus people for our roster, right? Those folks have a better chance of reaching their ceiling. So, if you got a guy, it becomes part of the puzzle. I would say that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, does it matter? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the puzzle analogy is one I use all the time. It's a great answer. For the guy, does it fit their profile? Again, everything, all the character I got from the school, does it fit what I thought about him? Does it fit who he is as a person, his interviews? Again, is he a guy that only shows up for himself? Does he show up for his teammates? Again, it becomes part of the equation. Now, if you're a really good player, does it maybe ultimately matter? I don't know. If you can play, you can play. But if you're breaking a tie or you're trying to decide between two players, that may be something that keeps you from going to one team, going to another. Again, for guys down the line now, again, players that are going to be maybe day three draft picks, it matters more for those guys. And again, then you get into your undrafted free agent category, then it really matters for those guys. Hopefully those players are not choosing to make that decision. But again, as always is with most players, depends on the individual, look at every player individually. But definitely, I've actually already talked to two teams who have their college director and national staying for the game this year, which is definitely maybe a departure from what's traditionally happened, but maybe good for these All-Star games.
All right, question number three. This will be my last one for you guys. Maybe y'all haven't seen him enough, but I think Michael Penix came down here with more at stake than almost any other player based on two practices. And the first one, obviously, is a day when they're pressing. Maybe can't get the snap in from center. It's always a little bumpy. But based on 2 days, have y'all formed an opinion? And if so, has it been a good one or a bad one?
Yeah, I can't lie. I'm a little old school that way. I haven't seen the tape to be able to really chop them up. But more than anything, you know, obviously he's a quarterback. You know, a lot of his evaluation is going to be the intangibles. How does he get along with the guys? How does he take coaching? You know, did he improve during the week? You know, because, I mean, look, he's new. I mean, he doesn't know all these guys that he's running around with. So he's got some adjusting to do, too, and that's normal. So you give him a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, but who he is as a person is going to be the most important part, you know, because really you're talking about putting the franchise in his hands. So it's about the other stuff probably a little more than what he's done out there right now.
Yes, no question. Yeah, no, the timing, again, good luck getting timing down with these guys in a couple days.
Right.
All the intangibles matter. Again, it was good to see. I hadn't seen him in person since Indiana in like 2020, 2021, whatever last year he was there. So, again, what does the body type look like? How does he hold up? How does the ball come out of his hand in person? Again, all that, you know, continue to do your evaluation on him. Again, it's not changing my grade on him. I still think he's probably going to be a 10-ish pick, really talented. Again, don't stand there. If you're a quarterback, don't stand next to Joe Milton and throw the football with just, you know, T-shirts on, because I don't care who you are, standing next to Joe Milton and throwing a football, you're going to look bad. Joe Milton can really sling it. This is where Joe Milton's going to do his best work. Again, go put on the tape, and we'll find out why Joe Milton's not in the same conversation as Mike Penix in the first round. But again, no, the grade for Penix doesn't change for me. Again, same thing for Bo Nix. Again, there's been some throws that I would have loved to see him make down here. Again, is it ultimately changing anything? No, they're getting to know him, spending time interviewing, seeing how he interacts with teammates. It's all part of the process for him. As James said, all part of the puzzle that we're putting together on these guys that won't ultimately be done at least until the middle of April, if not not right around round one time for these guys.
I have one more question, and I'll leave you guys alone. The fans love to see the one-on-ones between the tackles and the defensive ends, the centers and the defensive tackles, what have you. I have always felt that's the least accurate representation of how an offensive line and defensive line are going to interact with anything that's out here. Because you're never one-on-one in the middle of an open field in that situation. Do you feel like there's anything to be gained by those kinds of confrontations? Or more for TV, more for NFL Network and that kind of thing?
No, I think they're useful. Well, I mean, I'm speaking as a player. Like, I know for me, it was always good to help me with my timing, my hands and feet working together, getting cloth, you know, actually having a live person and some resistance. So that way it was always good in terms of evaluating for me. Like, I like to see them a little bit. I like to see offensive linemen isolated a little bit just so I can see what their ability really is. How good a body control and balance does this guy have? You know, how well does he use his hands? Can he bend? Can he anchor? So you get to see those things kind of fleshed out a little bit in these drills. But in the end, you do, like, offensive line really is, you know, like the best almost representative. It's a unit. So a lot of times they do better work that way, and that's usually a better evaluation. But I like to see the individual and, like, what the actual physical skill set is. And, you know, a lot of times that'll tell me, hey, this guy, maybe he's playing tackle, but I think he probably is a better guard, you know, that sort of thing. So I personally like
the pass. I think all those things you described, I think we would call those traits, right? We're always looking for traits. Again, forget the end of the day, who won, who lost the passer. If I saw a trait that I wanted to see, hey, I really didn't, you know, this is maybe a quick pass team. I didn't see a lot of real deep drops from this left tackle. Hey, maybe we'll get to see that down here. Maybe he's not comfortable yet, but man, he looks like he can do it. Same thing, outside guys, the ends now playing a little bit of three tech. How does he look lined up against these bigger guards? How do these, you know, tackles now line up at guards? How do they look inside? Is the game too quick for them? Again, same thing with these DBs. Maybe you get a nickel that's playing outside or a nickel that's now all of a sudden a safety. How are his angles? Again, traits all the time. Scouts are looking at traits. Again, forget some of the big picture stuff, some of the wow plays. Again, perfect coverage, perfect, you know, rep, perfect, you know, free release, whatever it is. Scouts want to see traits. Your one-on-ones are a really, really good chance, isolated, to see if these guys have the traits that either you want to see, you're confirming from tape, or, you know, maybe it's a new position, new opportunity to show something. So I think that wraps it up for us. James, it's awesome to have you on.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely,
man.
Absolutely. Well,
good to see you,
James.
Yeah.
James, you're letting money slip through your fingers, buddy. With that kind of deep voice, you need to be a very white kind of guy. You need to be singing "Can't Get Enough of You, Babe,"
I got a face for radio.
Thanks for tuning in. Make sure you always like, subscribe, share us. Again, Neil is at Inside the League on X. I'm Right Step ADV. Yeah, as always, if you have questions, shoot them on over. You can find us. We'll be back out for practice tomorrow. Anything you want us to take a look at, let us know. Otherwise, we'll keep watching and we'll keep scouting.
Get up for you.